Welcome to the Yeshiva Shalmaila. This week, we're going to be speaking to Reb Tzvi Reisman, the famous Mechaber Sfarim of Los Angeles. He lives in two worlds. He's a businessman, as I am. He's the Mechaber of Ratz Kitzvi, 20 volumes on new halacha, cutting-edge halacha. He's going to be speaking about one of the most vexing and upsetting halachic shilas, as well as a social issue, facing the Batei Dinim in Eretz Yisrael. Fascinating conversation. It'll also be followed by a conversation about Ger. We got calls, many calls, emails. You didn't have anybody on from Ger. We certainly tried. My producer called over 20 people. Here's an example of one of the messages we got.
I also fail to appreciate the fact that the topic was discussed. Nobody represented Ger. All I heard was a representation of a Talmud Reb Shaul, and then I heard some sort of professor from Hebrew University voicing in. I mean, you want to cover a subject that truthfully and honestly, without even giving one of this one of this very significant sides here a platform to just explain.
So we called another 20 people, and we got somebody who's a Maggid Shir in Ger to explain their position. And we also have a continuation of the conversation we've had with the Jewish historian, Hasidic historian, Rabbi Benny Brown, who's written Sfarim about Hasidus, etc., to talk about the division in Ger. It should be interesting conversation. Before we go to our guest, I'd like to speak about, it's the Elul, Rosh Hashanah, change, tshuva. How does the Baal HaTanya explain tshuva? He says it means returning to who you really are. What does that mean? I want to talk about shame. Shame is perhaps the most powerful emotion we can encounter, we can experience. And the power of shame is such that when we've encountered it, it's like touching it. It's the first time you stuck your fork into an electric current or you put your hand over fire. It's unforgettable as a child. And people will do anything to avoid shame. The Gemara says, Ki'ilu hargai, it's as if you kill the person when you shame them. And why is that? What does shame do? And what does shame mean? How do we encounter shame? Your father went to jail? What do you do for a living again? Oh, and you're still looking for a shteller? Or which yeshiva does your child go to? What about all that extra weight? Snicker, snicker. We've all had that experience. What does it trigger? Hostility, depression, striking out. People who are ashamed strike out. The fury gets redirected towards spouse, children, family, friends. And what does shame do? Shame causes something really powerful. We start abandoning who we are and embracing what society wants us to be. I once read a letter on the air, I still have it, and I've received different types of letters, but this one was very poignant. When I graduated high school, this is from a girl, I didn't want to go to seminary in Eretz Yisrael because I get homesick. I'm a homebody. My parents said I needed to go because of a good shidduch. So I went to seminary. I didn't particularly like it. I got homesick. I came home. I got a job. I worked for 2 years. One day my mother comes home all excited. I was read to a boy from a hush of a family. She was shining. What a shidduch. Oh, wow. What people are going to say. What a good example this will set for younger children. This will bring the family to a new level. I went out with the boy. He was a nice boy. He wasn't particularly my type. My parents were so proud. All my friends were talking about it. We got engaged. The wedding had to be in an expensive place because it was such a hush of a family. My parents couldn't afford it, so they borrowed money, and I contributed the savings I had for my 2 years. We now live in blank, not relevant, I don't want to say, where my husband wanted to learn. So I went to a school I didn't want to go to. I married a boy who wasn't my type and whom I didn't particularly like. I had an expensive wedding with money we didn't have, and I live someplace I don't want to live, all to impress people who I barely know and who I don't care about. And this girl signed it, prisoner for life. This is because of shame. What type of family did your daughter, who did they marry? And the opposite of shame is being embraced by society. What does Boucher do to us? It makes us feel tiny, insignificant, powerless. That's what shame does. Right? So the question is, how do we get the courage? If tshuva means returning to who you are, how do we get the courage in the face of the fear of shame, of the fear of what others, society, are going to say about you? Where do we get that courage from? Rebbe Rabbeinu Pshischa used to say over Avart, he said, Masa yagiyu maisei lamaisei avaisei. When will my actions reach the actions of the avis? Doesn't mean you should become one of the avis. In fact, he said something astonishing. He said, if the Rabbeinu Shalom came to me, if God came to me and he said, I want to make you into Avraham, Rebbe Rabbeinu said, I would say, no, you already have an Avraham. You don't need another one. I want to be Binim. I want to be me. What was he saying? He was saying, you and I, we're all one-time events in the world. There will never be anybody like me. There never was anybody just like you. I know it sounds a little bit like, you know, sort of like philosophical dribble. But science says the same thing. Don't they say there are no two people who were ever created who have the same DNA? Doesn't science, 3,500 years after the Torah says, Adam Nivra Yechidi, didn't they come to the same conclusion? So what does that mean? If there's nobody going to be like me, how could you possibly understand me? Why would I possibly want to imitate you? So when, you know, and there's a lot of shame, by the way, or attempted shame. Here on this program, you should hear the calls I get. Listen to some of the calls.
Koifer!
Baker!
We wanted to say that we heard, it was another yeshiva record, and we heard what you said about Knesset's Bay slavery. I want to say you're a fat loser. Garbage can, not really.
Koifer! Koifer!
Koifer!
Oh,
oh.
Mishka Mavis
Schwarzer. You Schwarzer.
One thing I know is that you sound so fanatically stupid. Stupider than my youngest child at the age of 3 months. Even she sounds smarter than you. Seriously, come on, open your eyes. The Gedolim saying something with the one stick fat Chel Hashem, the fact that they died is the biggest kid of Hashem.
Ay, 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 ay. What has happened to you? What has happened to us? What is going on here?
And my response is, you don't understand me. How could you understand me? Why should we agree?
The Mishnah says, Kishem she'ein partsufeim shaveis, just as no two people look alike, kach ein deyeseim shaveis. And the question is, why does it have to say kishem? And to say, ein partsufeim shaveis, ein deyeseim shaveis. But imagine if you walked past a person and he had red hair. And you said, ah, chutzpah, red hair? I have black hair, brown hair. Why do you have red hair? Or you passed somebody and he had lips, a long nose, and you said, ah, chutzpah? A long nose, or a short nose, or blue eyes? So would anybody have such an imagination to be amazed? It's the same thing. Just like you don't want to have, you're not surprised that he has red hair and you don't, he has blue eyes, red nose, long nose. Why are you surprised that he has a different opinion than you?
We were each Nivra Yechidi. You can't shame me because I know my mission. Shame is only, and this is a rule, shame is only when I need your approval, when I want to impress you, when I want you to embrace me. The minute I don't need your approval, you can't shame me anymore. What did Rebbe Rabbeinu say? You don't need anybody's approval. As great as a person, Av HaNavi and Moshe Rabbeinu struggled with this. Rambam writes, the whole discussion back and forth with Rabbeinu Shalom, he's Kfad Peh v'Kfad Lashon, he says, Shehayu Baish, he was embarrassed, L'daber, Ba'or Lasfasav, He didn't want to make a bad impression in front of Paro. He was terrified of being looking like a fool. Mi anoichi ki eilach, he says. So Rabbi Nishom says, Ani yaya imach, mash maima oimre elayim, hein lo yaminu li. He keeps going back and forth. He's embarrassed. And finally, the Rabbi Nishom tells him something. He says, Maze biyadcha, mata, throws it on the ground, turns into a snake. He picks it back up. What does this have to do with the discussion? And let me tell you how I understand it. If you have a mission, if you believe in yourself that you have a mission, you're never yechidi, I don't need your approval, and nobody can embarrass you, he tells Moshe, what do you have in your hand? He says, a mata. What's a staff to a shepherd? It's everything. It's all his power. With the staff, it's his walking stick. If a sheep gets out of line, he hits him. If he has to climb up a mountain, again, it helps him. Has to move up a stone away from the water, it's his lever. A wolf attacks, it's a weapon. He says, what do you got in your hand? All my power. He says, now throw it down. What does that mean? The power of who you are, the stuff you got. If you believe it's nothing, if you throw it in the ground, if you say, I ain't got nothing, I'm nobody, I'm powerless. You know what happens? Really becomes terrifying. And it chases him like a nachash. And there's only one person who could convince you otherwise. There's only one person who can embarrass you. You know who that is? Yourself. If you believe in your mission, you can't embarrass me. I don't need you. Only one person. When you throw your stuff down and say it's worthless. So what does Hashem say? Only you pick it back up. If you pick your stuff back up, you're indomitable. Nobody can touch you. Do you know that? Rabbi Yechiel of Ostravtse fasted for 40 years. The tzaddik who fasted for 40 years. His father was a baker. His grandfather was a baker. He was sitting by a mesiba with a bunch of rabbanim, and they tried to shame him. What did they do? They said, before we go to our topic, let everybody go around the table and introduce themselves and who their yichus is. And first one got up, he says, my heilige Zayde Gewende, mein elte Zayde Gewende, my elte Zayde Gewende, Magge. Each one went around the table with you, and they came to him, and they knew his father and grandfather were a baker. And he looked at them, and he smiled. And he said, my father was a baker, and my grandfather was a baker. And they taught me one thing. Fresh bread is much better than old, old bread. And that was his entire statement, and he smiled, right? He owned his stuff. What is tshuva? It's Elul. We often don't even recognize who we are anymore. We've so turned ourselves into a pretzel to satisfy other people. The Baal HaTanya says, tshuva, return to yourself. Elul, it's a really good time to re-embrace the one we are and to say, I won't spend a life motivated by shame because I picked up my stick. I own my stuff. You can't shame me anymore. Return to me. Let's go to our riddle of the week. So here's the riddle of the week. The Gemara in Sota and Daf Mem Ches Amud Beis, right, says, Rebbe Elazar HaGadol says, Kol mi sheyesh loy pas besalai. He has what to eat. V'yemer ma oichel amachar. What will I eat tomorrow? Einay ela miktanei emana. Right? He's missing a betachin. I want to ask you, do you have any savings? I mean, you know, you're thinking, you know, I have to pay for my daughter's seminary, I have to pay for chinuch, we have to put away money. Well, according to Rebbe Elazar HaGadol, it's very problematic. But that's not the riddle. The riddle is, this week's parsha, what does it say? V'yiyu chayecha tluyin lecha mineged. Right? Your life will be sort of hanging on a thread. You're not going to know what's going on. So the Gemara in Menachos, Kuf Gimel Amud Beis, says, what does that mean? Zeh ha'saymech ala palter. He says, the person who lives hand to mouth, paycheck to paycheck to pay his bills, that's chayecha tluyin lecha mineged, which is part of the teichecha. It's a klala. So here we have an interesting thing. You have a guy who says, I don't have a penny of savings. I'm a big Baal Amunah. Well, this week's parsha calls it, according to the Gemara Menachos, a klala, right? But you should put away savings, right? However, the Gemara in Saita says, Mishieshle pas besalavim amachla, how am I going to pay for my daughter's wedding, you know, son-in-law, bar mitzvah that's coming up, camp, is miktani amana. So which one is it? Are we supposed to have savings or are we not supposed to have savings? That's our riddle of the week. Before we bring on Rabbi Reisman, I want to give a very brief introduction to the topic because it's a somewhat complex topic. When people suffer from infertility, there are different solutions, but one very contemporary solution is, and this is in a case when there are many different, you know, reasons why people have infertility, but one is where the mother cannot carry the child. She has eggs that are, you know, good eggs, but she cannot, she has, for many different medical reasons, she cannot bear the child. So they, in a test tube, they take zera from the father, they take an egg from the mother, they turn it into an embryo, and they implant it into a healthy woman who usually for a fee, and it's usually done, I think, in Texas, other states allow it, for a fee, she, after implant, she for 9 months will carry the child. Big, healthy, strong person. And after the child is born and they document it, you have to make sure, because sometimes these bearing mothers actually want to keep the children. They get attached to it, so it has to be very well documented and lawyers. And what is it? They take that, the child is then delivered back to the parents who the egg and the semen came from them. So they are the DNA, the biological parents. Now, here is the big debate in the Paiskim. The debate in the Paiskim is if you give the egg to a surrogate mother, she sort of acts like a hotel, right? Or, you know, an incubator. Well, who is the mother? So we're going to hear some of the Paiskim believe it's the DNA contributor, the egg contributor who is the mother. And some of the Paiskim, he's going to say a number of Sfaradish Paiskim, etc., even by some of the Ashkenazish was a debate, believe no. Since she took a microscopic egg, it's not visible to the human eye, and turns it into a, you know, a healthy 8-pound child, it's the surrogate who is the mother. So that creates a lot of halachic debate, and Rabbi Reisman is going to speak about a very particular part of it, which is absolutely fascinating. Let's go to our guest.
Joining us from Los Angeles is Rav Tzvi Reisman. He's an iconoclast. He's both a businessman. He's a very big Talmud Chacham. He was Mechaba 19 Sfarim, Ratz Katzvi, which is on cutting edge halacha. He's also many articles. I see him frequently in Tchumen. He's a Talmud of Chevron, a Talmud of Reb Chatzkel Sarna, Talmud of Reb Baruch Mordechai Yizrachi. He's a Musmach of Chevron. He also served in the army together under Nachal Charedi on the division of Tzereba. He's both a member of the Mizrahi, the Aguda. He's a member of the Chever Nesius Ichud of Ger. So he's truly a Yadei Bakoil. Welcome, Reb Tzvi.
Thank you very much.
Reb Tzvi, you've written about an article, a very contemporary topic. What happens when you have an Israeli couple? Well, it's more frequent in Israel, that can't have children, Rahman al-Atslan. So the mother donates an egg to a surrogate, and the surrogate is often not a Bas Yisrael. They do a test tube baby with the zera of the father, who's a Yisrael, the egg of the mother, and they give it to a surrogate to be pregnant and deliver the child. And now this child, when given back to the Israeli parents, it's a suffix. We're going to discuss it, why it's a suffix, whether the child has a din of a Yisrael or not, because the surrogate was not a Yisrael. So what do? They perform gerus on this infant. And the question is this gerus accepted because it's growing up in a fraya family? And even though all the time the halacha is bezdin is matbil and ger katan, the reason why they do it is when it's growing up in a religious family, it's considered a schus for the child because he's going to become a shor matayra mitzvahs. But here it's growing up in a fraya family, The child will be a Michal Shabbos. So the question is the Geiris Chal, what to do in such a situation? It's obviously both a halachic topic, but also a political hot button, because what are we supposed to tell these children, not these people, not to have children? So you've written about it, and we'd love to hear some of your thoughts on it.
First of all, I want to tell you that, unfortunately, nowadays, 10% of couples that get married, whom, not whom, Jews, not Jews, have problems with fertility. One kind of another kind. But let's assume that it is problem right now only in Israel, for that matter. In America, it's a weird problem because the story happened just half a year ago when I started to understand the issue well. What happened is a couple went into a Chabad house and said, listen, I have a baby that I would like, it was born last Wednesday, and I would like to have a bris a week later, Wednesday. The couple is an Israeli couple, moved to New York, not from. And they have asked to have a bris milah. Rabbi, Chabad rabbi, asked them a few questions, and she told them, you know, I was the mother, however, the DNA, it was different story that what you bring up the other way. The DNA, the egg, I have acquired from a lady, from a Goya. Oh, really? You have a problem? Because we need to have Gavus. Gavus, what? Why? I'm the mother. I was the mother. They called another rabbi, and without mentioning a name, a famous rabbi in New York, and they said, we need to be Megaya them. You know, we're not accepting any Gavus to a non-frum Jew, because of maybe he's not going to be Mikhaim Mitzvahs. And this is not a schus, it is a choiva. What do you mean by that? You said just a minute of Kabbalah's Mitzvahs. A baby cannot be Mikabel Mitzvahs. The Gemara in Ksuvas Yud Aleph, the Gemara says that we are Zochin Le'odom Shelobefono, and we're Zochin to a cotton. Why? If he comes with his parents, the Goyim, to be Geir, to become a Geir. Why we become? Because it's schus. It's a schus for a kid to be a Jew, unless we know he's not going to act Jewish. That's the case. Anyway, that couple did not know exactly the case. When they're back, they come back to the shul, they want to perform the bris. They said to him, no, we have to have Geirus first. Geirus comes first. So make a Geirus. Oh, we can make a Geirus because the RCA, which is the Geirus place to here in America, and the Rabbanut in Israel, they don't want to make Geirus. Don't want to make Geirus? Fine. You don't want to make a Mila? Fine. They went, took the baby to a reform rabbi, performed bris, and we lost him. This kid is going later on, let's say, assume it's a boy or a girl. For that matter, let's assume this kid is a girl. In 20 years from now, this kid is going to be born, getting married to another boy. Let's assume the kid is getting married to a Reisman, to a son of mine, or grandson of mine. They don't tell anyone what happened. He's Jewish. The two parents are two Israelis who came from Israel, and they're going to get married. This lady, this kid right now at the age of 20 years old, she is a Jew or not a Jew? She didn't have any gear. Why would she need a gear? Because her DNA, the mother's DNA, or the egg that she was born from, was a Goyish egg. The surrogate was not a surrogate, the mother was her mother. So maybe she's a Jew, maybe she's not a Jew. According to Arav Obadiah Yosef, the DNA is the mother. According to Arav Eliyahu, Mordechai Eliyahu, chief rabbi, Rav Zalman Chemi Goldberg, who just passed away last week, the surrogate is the mother. Arav Eliyoshiv, at the beginning, when he was asked that question, he was told in his mind, I rather do the I hold that the DNA probably is the mother. He wasn't sure yet. Rav Avraham Sherman, the dying and Bezina Rabbani in Yerushalayim, convinced him that others hold differently. So Rav Yoshe decided, Sofik, let's have Giyu Mesof. What does it mean to have Giyu Mesof?
Well, wait, let me interrupt you here. You stated that there's a debate. When an egg comes from either a Jew or a non-Jew, let's say the case where it's a non-Jew and it's implanted into a Jew to be sort of like the hotel to carry the baby. You said Rabbi Leo holds that it's the surrogate, the hotel that is the mother.
Right.
Right. And
Okay,
so here's the issue with that. Okay, in the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, this is published. We'll put it on the thing. They grew lamb fetuses in an incubator. They took the fetus, they put it into an incubator, and they grew a lamb from it, right? The university in Tokyo took an embryo, and they implanted it into an animal, and they said that it didn't work, but they said eventually they think that they could get it where you could implant a human embryo into a cow, and the cow would be the surrogate to carry the mother. So my question would be to Rabbi Leo, in other words, just like this, it's the zera of the male, the semen of the male, that determines he's the father. If he dies, if he never sees the kid, even if he's noilad bambatya, he's the father. You would think logically that the zera of the mother, the beitza of the mother, the DNA defines that she is the mother. And what's the proof? If you took the DNA, an egg of a mother, and the zera of a father, and you implanted it like the University of Tokyo into a cow, right, and then it had a human baby. According to Rabbi Leo, the cow is the mother. So first of all, if the cow is the mother, the kid would be able, you could shecht the kid and eat the kid. Secondly, if the kid ever survived and didn't get shechted, he got an aliyah, they would say, your name is Zalman ben Cow. It borders on absurd. Like, it's mevili de gichach. How could Rabbi Leo believe that if the cow is the mother of this child, or the incubator is the mother of this child?
I am not going to doubt that you have a good question. I am not going to be Rabbi Eliyahu or Rabbi Goldberg's synagogue or attorney. You need to ask them. They are the poskim. Sometimes you don't understand the poskim. They say so. The mother is not just where she was born from. It's not just the hotel. It's the vitamins, what she is given during the 9 months. I have an idea that within a few months, you'll be able to have a rechem melachuti, an artificial womb.
Yeah, that's what they had in Pennsylvania. They had an artificial, they did it in a plastic bag.
But besides the fact, like Rabbi Shlomo Zalman says, that you cannot take the world of Tzomeach, the grown world, from what is happening in the agricultural world, to bring it to our world, to human being world, I assume you could say maybe the same with regards to animals.
So according to Rabbi Eliyahu, would this child need to be mechabed the cow as kibbud av aim?
Yes, it does.
You have to be mechabed the cow. Doesn't it seem absurd?
Hold on. Even according to Rabbi Eliyahu.
Rabbi Yashiv, so I heard that Rabbi Yashiv said, from this very thing, he said, a cow cannot be the mother. It's absurd. I heard he was chayza, and it's impossible that the cow should be the mother.
But
let's not name drop. Let's use our seichel. How is it possible that there should be a din of kibud aim on a cow?
Because yichus has nothing to do with where he was born, what the yichus is. You know, the halacha is that if father, and it happened in the army, a soldier died. After his death, the wife is asked to take the sperm and put it on, implant it in her. And they were asked, Rabbi Israeli, the Carolina is involved in it, asked, is the baby, by the way, the woman did not have any kid. Does she need yibum? No, she's going to the sperm of the father. No, says Rabbi Israeli. I think Rabbi Shlomo Zalman says the same thing. I'm not sure about Rabbi Shlomo Zalman or that. He says the ichus does not apply to the father. Father is not alive anymore, even though it's his sperm.
I understand
that.
Because we learned that's an achlokes the Karanoira. I'll tell you a funny story. I was in the airport once with Rav Baruch Mordechai. I was on a plane with Rav Baruch Mordechai Israchi, and he told me that they were learning Yevamis. So I said, "Can I ask you a kasha in Yevamis?" So he said, "Sure." I said, "Okay." I said, "The case that you just said, there was a court case in Israel where somebody didn't have any children died, that he was killed in war. So the wife married somebody. A few years later, they found that the boy had sperm. So the mother of this boy wanted to implant it into a surrogate and have grandchildren. She had no other children. And the ex-wife, the Almana, objected and went to court, and the court said they're allowed to do it. So he asked Baruch Mordechai Mizrahi, what would be the halacha if they had taken the sperm, put it into another woman 5 years later? Meanwhile, the woman had been misyabim, which is, she had a brother. After 5 years later, she finds out it's an Eishes Achav Shabbat Lama. It's Teitzim Mizeh Mizeh. All the new vladas would be Mamzeres.
Mm-hmm.
He was laughing. It's a very interesting show. But halacha is, it falls into the issue of Eishes Achav Shabbat Lama, etc. But there's no logical person could say that there's kibbutz av aim to a cow. But let's continue with your case.
Let's forget about this right now for a second.
Okay.
Why is the Yoshi passing it to a girl?
I don't know. I would say there's no sophic whatsoever.
Rabbonos goes by. Rabbonim here go by.
Yeah.
Everybody passing la loche. That's the case. Everybody. Most of the dayonim, I don't know others, passing la loche is sophic.
I'll tell you what they say. I would say they say, look, do geirus l'chumra. But l'maisa, it doesn't matter. It's bor. If this guy would be Mekadosh and Isha and the DNA came from a Jewish mother, I would say you could give skila based on that. But l'chumra, if it doesn't hurt anything to do it, right?
Beautiful.
But to turn a geisha kid into a Jew is a whole different child. Then it's going the other. Okay, but continue.
But if the geirus l'chumra, then I can go further, and I agree with you. The geirus is the chumra. I agree with you because he's sophic Jew, sophic non-Jew. Let's assume sophic non-Jew. But let's say it's the chumra. If it's the chumra, you can be making, for instance, get the chumra, can marry a kohen once in a while, isn't it?
I would say the child can marry a kohen, yeah.
Okay, if that's the case.
But your case is more difficult. Your case is more difficult. Your case is where the DNA is coming from a goya. So the halacha, I would say the child is not Jewish.
But you understand we don't pass him like that, like what you say, Sota Chumra.
I understand. What can I tell you? I don't understand it. It behooves me. I don't understand it.
I am not a rov and not a poistik.
Okay.
I want you to know in advance. I can tell you only what I try to do is get the information from all the rabbonim and find out. As a matter
of
fact, I have a letter here from Shmuel Eliezer Stern, who is at the Bezin of Badatz, who holds, what are you talking about? Ben Yidon Didan, yesh atrich la'blat shenolat mebeis shel goya, ikach 50% shematrich geirus. 50%, because maybe there's a suffix. Al 50% tzarich 100% geirus. I need 100% of geirus, according to him. According to you and me, I agree with you. It's only the Chumra both sides. If I go to Arab Eliyahu, it's one way. If I go according to Arab Ovadia, I go the other way. And I'll tell you a story that happened here in Los Angeles. Rosh Koilev calls me and asks me, I have a boy, a man that got married to a woman, and the woman is the surrogate. She could be the surrogate, but she needs to buy the acquired DNA from somewhere. What should she take? A Goya or a Jew? I said, do me a favor. If you can get a Jew, it's very difficult to get a Jew donating or paying or getting paid for X. Get a Jew. Okay. Get a Jew. He got a Jew. So on the Rav, the Rosh Koilel asked, I want to interview. He cannot meet her because it's legalities. You're not allowed to give the name. Can I interview her on the telephone? Sure, you can interview on the phone. He calls the woman. And he asked the lady, did you have a bat mitzvah? Yes, I had a bat mitzvah. Very nice. Would you mind to send me your parents' ksuva? Yes, I will gladly send you your parents' ksuva. She sent the ksuva after a few days. So you won't finish the following. The ksuva came from a reform shul. So I don't know if they're Jewish or not. The rabbi said, I cannot verify she's Jewish. Says the father, you know what? I'm a Sephardi. I follow Rabbi Eliyahu. I'm going to go ahead and have the lady give. Is she Jew or not a Jew? It doesn't make any difference because I pass like Rabbi Eliyahu. I won't tell anybody that I went to Geirut. Because I'm not going to go to Geirut. And this baby is going to go 20 years later, get married to a Jew, and nobody will know. Because if he's married Ashkenazi, he marry a Reisman, or for that matter, he marries another Ashkenazi name, and then they won't know the difference, and they will get married. If the girl is a kid, and Ashkenazi thinks it's like you, that the girl is a Goya, what do we do?
Hello, you could have a lot of other problems. Let's say she takes the DNA from a Jewish woman who's an Ashes Ish. So again, according to some of the Paiskim, the child could be a Mamza too, not according to a Moshe, but I'm saying so. It gets really very complicated.
I don't worry about the Mamza so much because the laws...
There's no B.S. Isser, I understand. That's, but the Satmar Rebbe argued on the Moshe with that.
That's the Moshe.
Yeah.
Okay, if you go according to the Satmar, you're not allowed to do any of Lab's performance. And I understand. But you have to understand that it's... At least now around the world, 10,000 Jewish couples that get around the world that get doing having IVF. Some of them their own, some of them from a different Jewish men, a Jewish sperm, non-Jewish sperm, a Jewish surrogate, non-Jewish surrogate. 10,000 a year, 200,000 couples, 200,000 kids in years to come, what do we do? Don't we look looking for Ether? Because he is not Kabbalah Mitzvahs, he doesn't have Kabbalah Mitzvahs. So there's schus. I can give you so many that tell you that you don't need the Giyur, and I'll tell you why. You know, you are right about Kabbalah Mitzvahs. Most of the poskim pray Second World War, ask when somebody gets married to a Goya, not to have a Giyur, because the mother did not want to be Megaya, and the house would be the house of the mother. The mother is a Goya. This was then. Today we are talking about two parents who are Jews. Father is a Jew, the mother is a Jew. The kid maybe is not Mekayim all the mitzvahs. Maybe he's not Mekayim Shabbat. He has a Mila. He has a schus. I can read you Chavetzeres HaSharon. I can give you even Rav Kook agreed not to marry if the mother is a Goya. But we're talking about a different case altogether. Jewish mother, that's one. And if you, the kid, we don't know what the kid on the Hatsi Evet, Chosi Ben Choyrin, we say Koifin Oiso, Le Shacher Ta Evet, here, what will the kid do? The kid shouldn't get married to a Goy.
Well, Rabbi Tzvi, you mentioned Rav Kook, whose Yartzai was this week. In Shalos HaTshuva's Das Kayin, in Simon Kayin, let me read the Tshuva you're referring to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He says, Be'inyin Shadova Mizbar, She'ein Daitam L'Kayim L'Zara Meisurei Taira, right? Pshita, right? What does he say? Kivan She'chastra Kabbalas HaMitzvahs Ein Zu Geiris Klal. That's his Iglashin.
Well, I agree with you, because you're talking about the parents are not Jews. And he is all adult.
So he says, but his question is, if there's no Kabbalah Samitzvah, if the child is going to be in Mechal Shabbos, he says, what is it?
And Reb Tzvi,
let me just add on. And Reb Shlomo Zalman, in Shalos HaTshuva's Mincha Shlomo, it's Chelek Aleph Siman Lamed Hey, he says that the person who is Magai or somebody like this is either Lifnei Iver thousands of times, because you're Magai or a child who is going to be Mechal Shabbos, who's going to eat Tarfus, and every time he eats Tarfus and Mechal Shabbos, the Rav who was Megayer him is either Lifna Iver, because now the person is either an Isser, and if he wasn't Megayer him, he wouldn't have been either an Isser.
Because, first of all, you're Megayer when you are, the Rav who is Megayer, the Lifna Iver is only the Rabbonon in such a case. Because if you look at the Shach says if somebody is a Mumar, it's also, there's no Lifnei Iver.
I understand that, but the Shachin Kuftan Aleph. But respectfully, Rav Tzvi.
But you talk about a Sufik. We're not talking about a Goy.
Good, so it's a Sufik Lifna Iver for thousands of times. Do you want to be the person who's Magaira child that you could be over? The Rav could be a Misafik over thousands of times Lifna Iver?
It's not. It's not the same because it's not the same case. Rav Kook spoke about the case that was a definitely Goy. You yourself say that the Goy is on, the Giyur is on the Chumrah. So it's not a Giyur.
No. I think that if the DNA is from is a Jewish mother, and
okay,
the sorry,
you made up your mind that's not true. Rabbi Yossi passing differently.
Okay, but it's just logic says there can't be kibbutz. I'm just saying my logic says there can't be kibbutz aim to a cow.
Come on.
Right? That's my logic, right? Or to a plastic bag, like the University of Pennsylvania, they did in a plastic bag.
You can't use your logic here.
No, I'm not using my logic. I'm just using a svara. I'm just saying a svara that if the DNA is from a Jewish woman and that the surrogate is a goya, you could do it lechumer. There's no damage. There's nothing to lose. But if the DNA is from a goyish mother and you put it into a Jewish woman or into a cow or into a plastic bag, that it's a geiris me'ikar adin, and the Rav who does that, he's being able, according to Shlomo Zalman, even
not
if it's misafik, if you say, lefever a thousand times.
Reb David, listen well. If I want to eat chazir, my logic says eat chazir. Says the Gemara, say he is she. Why? My logic is not. I love chazit. It helps me. You're not eating it. Why? Because Torah told you not to. The poisek, you poisek adol, as I have to be very careful when I use that terms, and that I crowning Rabbi Yoshi that they say sofek. I think he put us in problems by saying it's sofek. You would say love what you say.
Dolzain, even if it's a suffix, so it's a suffix lifna iver thousands of times, Dolzain.
But it's not because it's a drabonon.
It's not a drabonon. I don't agree with you. The only time it's a drabonon, wait, there's two exclusions. I'll tell you why the shach is not negeya. The dagol mevava and the shach are both not negeya. Rabbi Reisman is referring to a shach in Kuftan Aleph. He's talking about selling candles to an Ivit Kechavim. I think it's like Sifkatan. Zion, I think, in the Shach over there. And it refers over there, so the Shach says that if somebody's a Machal Shabbos, right, there's no din even of Misayel L'dvar Aveira. I believe that's
right,
the Shach.
Exactly.
Right,
exactly.
But over here, the Katan at this point is not a Machal Shabbos yet. It's a future Machal Shabbos. That's one chilek. And another thing.
So it's better.
But I'll tell you another thing, that many
Paiskim. It's better. That's not that you helped me.
But many,
how many Baalei Tshuvos did you make in Esa Torah and other institutions? What happened to them? Maybe he's going to be a Jew. How do you know? Just opposite. Says they, I read you as somebody that says it's going to create a mission in 20 years. That's what you don't think?
To create a ger who you don't know if he's going to be shame, and about Tashtis is not going to be shame. I'm quoting a Mincha Shleim. It's not my svara.
The Mincha Shleim talks about a ger that was an adult, or the parents are going. There is not what our case.
Shereva Lefneiver, right?
Two Israelis. The purpose I use is two Jews, two from Jews. They don't want to tell the kids that in 20 years they have to tell the kid is an IVF child. They're not telling the kid. They're lying to the kid, so to speak, with bills and payers. They don't take the kid to the mikveh even. You know that. How many kids are like this in many cities? I can tell you that somebody was met in Zupnik, a kid like that. They didn't make a giyus. They just made his own business. He was embarrassed.
Well,
I know the shape.
So,
you're talking about you comparing apples to oranges. These are apples, not oranges.
So bottom line is you have the majority of Paiskim, including Rabbi Yashiv, say that that you don't do geiris on a kid that's going to go into a Freya family, right? But you do have, I believe Ramesha disagrees, right?
Ramoshe is one of them who disagrees. Ramoshe talks about the school. Ramoshe said the word schools. It's just opposite.
Right. Ramesh's opinion is, and it was Rabbi Yashiv's opinion is, he says, Gerkot Matulis Yoldas Bezin, because it's a schuz. It has to be a schuz gummer. He brings from Taisis Yishanim and the Shita.
But he calls himself a Ger.
Yeah, and Ramesh disagrees. Ramesh says that it's, even if the kid is going to be fry, he says, since Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chelik Loilam Haba, he says it has a din of a schus, even if it's not a schus gomer.
Now, well, I want to say something. If you want to quote, I'll quote you.
Okay.
Then a thief says when you have a suffix, then the thief is a new madaf pehei, pehdavad amud aleph, amud bet. This fasemes says when you have a suffix ger, you don't know suffix, you have to be megayer or not, you have to megayer him, he says. He says the lotion is, when you found a baby, the ear sheruba nochim, galoches, says Rashi, ashi gather the kabel alav geirut, says the Beromet Sadeh in the Netziv, mechuyav begadlo leizgayer lenogi yodus. You mechuyav lemegayer him, otherwise you don't know what you do with him. And there is a full mechaschino that tells you what you do, a sophic, a Jew, is not a Jew. If we have a sophic, I will show it to you, and Rabbi Tivoli, the rabbi of Lyon, France, right? You know what? It's sex speaker. For sure you need to be megayering.
Why? What's the logic?
You're suffering the Jews are not you, and sex speaker, Ledina, even according to the Rambam, that we say, Lechumra, Medoraisa, Medorabonon, even Medoraisa, he would say that you have Lechumra. So you have to go, he has to keep you as a Jew if you have a suffix. You can't say not a suffix because your logic.
I'm not following. I don't understand. Explain that. Explain what you're saying.
Okay. It says as follows. You have right now a suffix Jew or not a Jew? Suffix Yudi or suffix Nochi, right? So suffix Yudi, suffix Nochi is a suffix. We pass in the Loche, Sheikh Sheikh Al-Humram, the Rabbanam of the Raisa, between the Rashbo and the Rambam, right?
Right.
According to Rashbo, Lechumra, according to the Rambam, Lekula. But the Rambam, Lekula, says the Meir Lo'ilom, the Meir Lo'ilom, Rabinovich, and Munkacher said the same thing, it's only be Messias, but Ladina is the Chumrah always. So if the Chumrah, that kid is going to be now 13 years old, he's a Sophic. We didn't make a Giyur on him. We don't know what he is. Is Mechuyev to be Mikhaim the Torah? Is Mechuyev to put on tefillin? Yes, he does. Is Mechuyev to eat kosher? Yes, he does. Why? Because of Sophic Doraita the Chumrah. So we have a suffix here. Lechumra. He has to be Mekayim. What do you want?
But he's never, he's never going to be Mekayim anything. What's the Lechumra? You're going to be Megayim. He's going to be Mechal Shabbos now for sure as a Jew. Lechumra should say, don't be Megayim.
But the Jew won't make any difference anyway. What
I'm sorry?
Don't you Megayim? You're making a Jew that has every Jew, you call him, you make him in Goy. Let him please be Mekayim the Torah.
So if I care, Lechumra should say, don't.
About Tshuva.
Reb Tzvi, Lechumra should say the other way. Don't be Megayim. Yeah. If the tzad that he's a Jew, he's going to be over an Issa. Let me just finish my point. The tzad that he's a Jew, he's going to be over Isurim. Because he's, right? Because he doesn't know because he's a guy. The tzad that he's a guy, you make him into a yid, now for sure he's going to be over Isurim. So don't be Megayer him, because Safik Daraisa Lechumra, and this way there's a 50% chance he's not going to be over Isurim.
But he's over Isurim. There's 50% he's over.
But there's 50% he's not, and if you Megayer him, it's 100% that he's going to be over Isurim.
The Isurim that he is over, all either 50% Isurim, 100% Isurim. The Isurim is over.
Yes, I'm saying you would rather have 50% chance than 100% chance. Safik Darais Lechumra, let him be 50% chance that he's not over anything.
No, but you're talking about, so for him, and you said Lechumra to him, for the boy, do it. I'm telling you, it's not Safik, it's Fake Faker, by the way. Because we're passing like the Rashbo that Fake Faker, Safik Darais Lechumra, and therefore he has to be, he's Mekayim anyway. And then maybe person like the Rambam, that's the Kula. If you put the Rambam, according to Rambam, the Kula, you would have Megayerim, no?
Yeah. Fascinating. And I tell the Olam here that if you buy the Rutz Kitzvi, the Sefer is full of such things that you can't go to sleep at night because your head is tumbling the whole night over the questions. And Tzvi is clearing.
You can find it at Big Eliza.
You can find it at Big Elizon. So, Reb Tzvi, you are probably one of the most fascinating Jews in Klal Yisrael because Mizrahi, Aguda, Ger, Mechabes Sfarim, a well-known businessman. How do you balance everything?
I think a Jew has to be a Jew every minute, like Baal Shem Tov says. Baal Shem Tov says that Shavuos is Chetzel Hashem, Chetzel Lachem. What does it mean, Chetzel Hashem, Chetzel Lachem? It's not La'orech, but La'rochav. Every minute has to be devoted into two. The Torah tells you to work, tells you to sit and learn. Choices in Brochus Yud Aleph, I think, with base, you know, Yud Gimel Yud Aleph, Choices says, ask the question, every time you go out of the sukkah, you have to make a brocha. And if you make a brocha for Torah in the morning, once is good enough. Once for a mitzvah, you have to make it every time, for Torah not. The Pshat in Tosfos, the way Tosfos answers, is the way Tosfos and the Rosh answer the same way. That every minute that you do something is Torah dik, is Torah. And that's what it's all about. You can work, you can create business, you can sit and learn, you run a family, but there HaTorah is Torah dik. You can make the mitzvah. And you will not be over if you're over this about it.
Reb Tzvi is referring to Tyson Yud Aleph Amud Beis, the Yom Asal Shekfar. Reb Tzvi, you know that the Chassidim used to say that it has to be Kiddush B'Makom Suda.
Yeah.
And what does it mean? A lot of people that the Makom Suda is their office where they earn a living. Over there, they could do Kol Davar Asa Sheba Olam, Rachman Al Tzlan. You know, they don't make a Kiddush Hashem, put it that way. And then when they go to Shul, over there, they you know, they roll their eyes back into the head and they dance Kaddish, Kaddish, Kaddish. So they say, no, it has to be Kiddush B'Makom Suda. The Makom Suda has to be B'Kiddusha, so you have to be able to combine both.
Very good. I think that you are an example of it as well, if not more than that.
Well,
and I commend you. That's why I went on the program. Everybody.
See, I follow in your footsteps.
Okay, I don't know which one is who. I love to be your friend. I enjoy being your friend and being your colleague as well. At Tour University, this is all about.
Yeah, it's been a big honor to have you on, and you should be gesund. And I saw the maima that you wrote about Corona. You should be gesund, and Klal Yisrael is lucky to have somebody like you.
Thank you very much. It's the same to you. Thank you very much. I do appreciate it. Thanks.
Also. From Eretz Yisrael, we have Reb Beryl Abramovich. He's a Ger Chassid. He heard the last program. We got a number of calls and email writers that said we did not have anybody on who is a Chassid of the Rebbe, and that was, you know, it's just not appropriate to do such a conversation one-sided. So we, you know, Baruch Shem Kavod Mahusei Lelamvod. We'll start over again. Reb Beryl, I understand you listened to the last program. As a Gera Chassid, give me some of your thoughts.
So I will start with the famous Medrash, the Medrash in Parshat Bechukosai. The Medrash says, Chishavti derochai v'ashiva ragalei el edesecha. Oma David, Ribbono shel Olam, b'chol yoyim v'yoyim, ha'yisi mechashed v'oymer, l'mokim poloini, the base dear Polonis on Yahilich. David HaMelech says that every single day he would think, perhaps I should go to this business adventure, maybe some other business opportunities. But how you ragline with VAs Oisi Levotik Nisios or Levotim Adroshes? The famous question asked by many is every single day David HaMelech was planning to drop the Besmedrish and go and work. And only Raglim of Yeis Oisli is about to consider the bottom of Roshais. There is a vote brought by the Rebbe in Toshin Samach Kimmel, which says that David HaMelech every single day made Cheshbon HaNefesh. Why am I going to learn? What am I trying to achieve? He always was self questioning himself, why and what am I trying to do? Of course, we know. As Nafsa Kodim Nishma, we do whether or not we understand. But a person has to ask himself why. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Not whether I should be doing or not be doing. The famous Marsha, Adur Abastra and Sugya of Matan Torah, explains that two ksarim are only given because of Naseh Koidmin and Nishma, because otherwise Naseh would be one, and Nishma would be a Hechsher Mitzvah for Naseh. But if you do Naseh Koidmin and Nishma, you do regardless. But you're doing Nishma because you want to understand Hashem's Torah and why you're doing it, you want to know what you're doing and why you're doing it, that's where you get two ksarim. Back to the point, I heard the last week's, 2 weeks ago, the broadcast in short, and we, as Ger Chassidim, don't ask whether we should or not. We know we should be doing, because Baruch Hashem, we have a leader in Manig Yisrael, Malach, Demel Malach Lekim Tzavah Kois, as Gemara says, Moed Katun Yud Zayin, Yivak Shuterim Epil, the famous Vatar Abdisha, which are brought down in all Chassidish Sforim, that we don't know what Malach looks like. We don't know what Malach looks like, but we know that a Malach is beyond us. So too, Chassidim Ufamid of Hashem knew that a Rebbe is beyond us. But yes, we have to ask, why are we doing what we're doing? We have to understand what we're doing, and especially as the Rebbe explains himself at length, why he wants and what he wants and what he wants to achieve. Shall I continue?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, so I understood the first question asked was, why did he change the Derech HaLimud? Am I right?
Yes.
Okay. So let's start one by one. There are 3 points here. Number one, everyone is surely aware, that Shulchan Aruch HaRav and the Rambam both paskin, that the mitzvah of Yedias HaTorah comes before the mitzvah of Yegias and Havanas HaTorah at great depth. Obviously, in Ger, they always said, the Tozich Nish Genaren, no one should ever mess around and learn quickly. You have to understand what you're learning, the utmost depth. The question is, are you making emphasis now, the younger years, on Yediyah, learning Gemara Rashi, Gemara Shri Tosfos properly, knowing it cash upon request, Mizamonim? Or are you making your Ikka, as they taught me when I learned in Yeshiva, you're learning how to learn? Today, every average bocha knows by the time he gets out of Yeshiva, an average bocha. 500 blood Gemara Rashi Tosfos or 1,000 blood Gemara Rashi. Bochrim who have better heads and are more talented can know half of Shas, the whole of Shas. But the main dogish is to note well the Habaminat Maskona, Shemisholcha Odom Al Tigamgim, Vashinantom. I once heard from a Magichir, all Kaisrael always knew that people have to know what you're learning. No boy should come to his chasna with nothing in his hand, a few svaras. Everyone knows the famous heads of Rav Shach.
We've had a few people, emails, we got a lot of calls and emails, and one of the callers said, he said that they don't learn Tosfos in most of the yeshivas, just Gemara Rashi, even the old Bachrim. Is there any truth to that?
The person is definitely not off the beat entirely. I am a Magichi in the yeshiva. There are 4 streams in every yeshiva.
I'm sorry.
Every yeshiva has 4 streams ordinarily.
Okay.
That is very much into the line of Kol Bonaich Limude Hashem.
Okay.
Every person has to be connected to Torah.
Right.
Their yeshivas, the big dogish, every boy should have his ability to find his place in the Torah. So there is a stream of Gemara Rashi Tosfos with all the Tosfos. There is a Gemara Rashi, which is called Gemara Rashi Arba, which means they learn 4 blood Gemara Rashi with many of the Tosfos. There's Gemara Rashi Sheish, which learn only Tosfos Shnegeta Pshat Mamish. They learn mainly Gemara Rashi. Then there's Yisa Shas, which is a special stream for people that even jump over certain sugyas, which are difficult, and they usually come with a big idea over the whole Shas, but they don't learn Home Sechter straight, because their brains, as we understand, are not the sort of people that would enjoy to learn Home Sechter begin Tchilat Sofei. That's the smallest stream in most yeshivas.
Without any Tosfos, Gemara Rashi, but they know the Home Sechter.
Again, if they ask a question, they want to learn Tosfos, no one's
okay. Besides Tosfos, those that are in, like, the better learners, do they learn Tosfos, Rosh, Ran, you know, Ramban, Rajba, Ritva, Meiri, do they learn Rishonim and Achronim?
Do they learn Rishonim? Whoever wants to can learn. Today I taught for the boy, Ram, the Rabbeinu David Mitzachim, but the dogish is to know Yiddish Torah. When they get married, we have hundreds of young alayit, the Lochosh, the Mishpat, the Ktsois, the Sivis, Tumim, and the Reid, all the real Havana, the Bochum, the No, the glad name, the Noshim, the Shainim. But the dogish in Yeshiva is to know the Mesecht. Well, probably that they can, everyone can say the Gemara offhand. To wake him up middle of the night. Let's start. So, Mufkid. Let's go. First round, second round, third round, fourth round. Off he goes. The dogish is Yiddish Torah. A bochur wants to learn Rishonim, he's glad to do so. Generally, in the Yeshiva Gedolos, they learn like in Poland, like in Shtibach form, which means there's no Shiurim come up. Only the real difficult figures they get occasionally give a Shia. The bochur learn, and the Magachik goes around the tables and questions the boys and sees how he understands. Only the younger Shurim and Shavitana that have a drocha with taking boys into Shiurim. So every boy learns, and the Magachi makes sure every boy gets direction.
So the boys that want to learn Rishayim and Achrayim do?
Gladly, why not? But the dogish is to know many blatter.
Let me ask you another question, which some of the callers hinted at, as well as the... I'm not a chassid, so it's hard for me, but you see certainly in the svarim of the earlier... But well, it's not true, even in the later, that... The idea of going to a tzaddik was somebody who's ma'or yoshim shayrish on the shama, certainly by the chayza and by the Rebbe Remelech or the Magid, that he finds your nakuda, he's able to be ma'or the person is this ma'or through the tzaddik. Let's say a chassid says, you know what, this tzaddik is, he doesn't talk my language, he's not being ma'or me, I need somebody else. Is there anything wrong with a bacher, a younger man, a permity saying, you know, I want to leave Ger, and I want to go to Kozhenitz. I want to go to...
Nothing wrong at all. I have a cousin who left to Breslev, and he went to Rabbi Kluger, and he dashed by my simchas, a nice person, yeah. After the Talmud Chochem also. It's perfectly legitimate. Nothing wrong with that at all. The Chatzkele.
Well, watch the Makayr of this. The Chedush HaRim... The Chedush HaRim left. The Chedush HaRim left Kozhenitz. He felt the Shairish Anishama was in Shescha, right? And the Chayza, the Yida Kaddish left the Chayza, as well as the Rebbe Rabbonim left the Chayza too. There's a long history of Chassidim. So, with the current Rebbe is without doubt a very great person. He is his Moira many. But if a Chassid says, "Look, we found another Rebbe like this Reb Shaul Alt, who I don't know, and I speak." Isn't it the history of Chassidus? We go to whoever could be Moir me if they want to go to the Baba Sali. If they want to go to the Baba Sali's home. Like Moshe Rabbeinu said, Levaish, you call, they should all be the V.A. Hashem, he said to Elder the Maid. Is that the Baalach in Ger?
100%. Whoever wants to leave, can gladly leave to whoever you want to go and leave.
So then,
you don't
so then,
anyone leaving at all.
So then here's what I was asked you. This is what I was asked. That and I met a chassid actually told me that he wanted to go to this Reb Shaul Alta.
Yeah.
And they told him, you know, your kids will not be accepted anymore now with yeshiva. You won't be able to do shidduchim with the rest of us. And it goes against sort of like the history of Shischa. Like whoever's Meir you want to go to Ramosha Feinstein, go there. Like go wherever you want to go. We're looking for Ayv Hashem. Where you chap your Cyrus? So then, if that's the case, why would they ask that he says in Matzah Shabbos Kodesh Parshas Vayeshev, right? They instructed all of them to sever ties with their family members if they joined Reb Shaul Alta. Isn't that sort of like Levayish Yekala Am Neviim? Like that's sort of always
100%.
Been the Malach. So how
I
why is that?
I'll explain something very short. I'll explain you how I see it. A simple chassid. I had a rebbe called Ramatche Yosef Kamyunka. Probably never heard of him. He was a great Talmud Chacham, Talmud Rav Dessler, Talmud of Nachum Zember before the war. He was a Rav of Aguda in London. He was a chavrusa of the Rebbe Shlita, together with the Prey Menachem. They learned together Sechtes Bein. He told me an instruction. Going back 18 years ago, he told me, "Geb achting sin schlechte chaverin." Keep distance from bad friends. So I asked him, what does the Rebbe mean? So he told me a bad friend means somebody that says that the Emor Emes or the Rebbe, the Beit Yisrael or the Rebbe, But today the concept Rebbe no longer exists. Anyone who says that, keep distance from him. And he added, we say mi Adam ra, mi chove ra. It seems superfluous. The Adam ra is a chove ra. So he told me, a person can be a good person, but he'll be your friend who will ruin you. A person doesn't believe in your Rebbe and doesn't believe in the concept of Rebbe, keep distance from him as far as possible. So he told me. Chassidus brought up people to believe in a Rebbe, as we mentioned earlier from Rebbe Dusha. That's something Malach Hashem Tzokis told. My grandfather told me that he stood behind with a liberal Rav, the Orthodox Rav, a very liberal and tolerant person, did on the West Side. He told me, and he told even to secular Jews, that the scent which he smelt behind the Radomsky Rebbe's chair saved him from sin his whole life. Hasidim saw in a Rebbe something holy beyond us. The people that I know, and that's what they delegate, and I even heard that also in the comments that I did hear from last 2 weeks ago's show, don't believe in the concept of tzaddik in today's generation at all. They say that tzaddik, it doesn't no chazal of meir rabach k'meir shemayim. It's not shemayim. It's something easy. It can only help people from a crowd that don't believe in rebbes. And I had one. My own daughter came home crying. The one of the people that was kept in the school till the end of this year, because she finally, Baruch Hashem, left, spoke against the rebbe publicly in school, which is very, very painful. Again, I don't say all, I don't say many. It's enough that it's a common illness or shitta. It can be maybe a little shitta, maybe a kosher shitta, but it's not shitta which I want to have my children being brought up with. So I want to protect my children. The Moses was set up.
If some of the people there who have went to the new Reb Shaul Alter do not believe in tzaddikim, but somebody who does believe in tzaddikim says, I am going there, I believe in this tzaddik, but the other tzaddik is more my... He talks to his... My Sharish HaNesham is more with him. Would his kids be thrown out of Ger?
To be honest, I don't have Ruach HaKodesh. I don't know who believes and doesn't believe.
Reberl, when the criticism of Pshischa, right, by the Hasidim of the Chayza, and ultimately the Hasidim of the Reb Melech that were left, was that Pshischa is a cat of Rishayim, and you can't join them, which was obviously absurd, I mean, right? So this line of let's paint with a brush, you know, the those who leave as Rishayim, it's not a new Mahalach. That's also an old Mahalach.
I understand very well what you're saying, but a very valid point. If you wish, I don't think it's appropriate here because it might build on Lashon Hara. You're asking, perhaps many of them are like the Pshit Chachidim who are trying to find something ideal.
Right.
I would love to believe so. But unfortunately, all the people I know firsthand are not that way. There are many that have children, and I had children. But we have to protect ourselves, and we can't be naive and say later, I'm sorry. I know personally a very good friend of mine who did not distance himself from them and told me after 4 years he felt himself going downhill in Emunah from the Kirch of the Tzonis, and then he stopped. And he's very much sure he felt himself becoming healthier in the Rochen years. Every person is gullible and is prone to have the Tzonis work on him. No one is immune to the Tzonis. I'm not saying they are Leitzim. I would love to believe that no one there is a Leitz. I know a few Leitzim. Let's be the most of not Leitzim. I would definitely not take a risk.
Reberl, don't you believe it's wouldn't you say it's a remarkable coincidence, right, that you could leave Ger and go to Breslov, it's fine. You could leave Brer and go to Mir, it's fine. You could leave Ger and go to Vizhinets, it's fine. But if you go to this other Gera sort of break-off, over there it's not fine because only people, or a lot of the people going there, are really Lutzanim and Adam Ra and Chavera. This one here conveniently comes out as the Anashim, Roim, and Rishayim are going. Doesn't it sound like a remarkable coincidence?
It's not a coincidence. It's a very valid point. My cousin went to Breslov. The first thing he did was he wanted his children to have Breslov Chinuch. He took all his children out and took them over to Breslov Meisters. Any person who would go from Chabad over to become a Litvak, the first thing he would do normally if he's sane would take his children out of Chabad and take them over to Litvak Meisters. No normal person who doesn't like the chinuch in ger, because he believes the chinuch in ger is not the way he wants to, would have to have his children within the ger system. If he says clearly that he doesn't believe in the ger system because it is radical, because it is whatever word now he wants to use it, why does he want his children in our system?
So I think that's a very, very intelligent question. And I can only surmise that, let's see, if I was a ger chassid and I decided, you know what, I want to be more inspired. And look, I started off in the Mir. I went through many of the great yeshivas. When I left the Mir, I went to a brisk for a little. I wasn't bayit in my old rabbeim. I said, right now, I went back. I went to Reb Nachum. I wasn't bayit in my old. I said, I got a certain roimimus here, and then I moved on. I felt I could get here. So it's not that they're being bayit. They're saying, right now, I think I could get a certain big hesiris over here. So that's one possibility. Doesn't mean he's not bayit anymore. It means he's a big rebbe. I could get his cyrus right now. I'd like to learn be'in, and this rebbe learns be'in, mashal. It could be you have children in fourth grade and seventh grade. And a lot of times it's sensitive to move kids at the wrong year. It could be very detrimental. So you say, you know what, by high school we'll change them. By Yeshiva Gedolah we'll change them. It's not the best year for my kids. I mean, that's very understandable too, no?
Yeah, and I wouldn't believe any vision for cheder would let us. A vision to chos, we became a vow to chos to keep his children in the moistus. Very unlikely.
Well, why is that? I mean, they're all the same. We're all tzvayis Hashem. Like, what does it matter? You found something else that inspires you. Like Moshe Rabbeinu says, like, why would it be? I don't understand that.
The question is a very valid question, and I'll explain it slightly. Going back 50 years ago, all Kehilas learned in the same public school together, and all learned the same Yeshayakis. As the generations moved forward, and the many shifts became far more apparent, and far, far more extreme, no one learned with Mizrahi anymore, even though 50 years ago, everyone learned in Cheder Sinai. And the Beit Yisrael wanted very much such Beger Chedorim and Geir Bas Yaakov, which weren't around until the Rebbe became Rebbe, Bas Yaakov. And not only together with the Vizhnitz, so the Belz, so the Skver, and so the Slonim, and so the Moschus, and even Reb Shaul also opened up his own moistus, for obvious reason, because he believes he wants to have his children brought up the way he wants them to be brought up in his own moistus. And he opened up a cheder, and he opened up a yeshiva, gedolah, and ketana. So he also seems to believe that he can't have his children any moistus. He has to have it the way he wants it, because he has a difference. So if you have a child in this cheder who feels that he's being taught wrong, and he's in the wrong system, and he's being fed father at home, that you're doing the wrong thing, that's very unhealthy, both for the child getting mixed messages, which is terrible in chinuch. The famous thing, and the parent says one thing, the rabbi says the other thing, that's terrible. And that's what my daughter experienced this year with a friend of hers. I feel very bad for her. I speak to her at length, explain to her, you know, we have to understand how the girl, she comes from a different community, but she said, but she's mocking my rabbi in public. That's because the Geir Bas Yaakov has in it 30% more Geir school girls that wanted the Geir Bas Yaakov, but they all kept their mouth shut. The Jacob Achsidim and the various other ones that are there. But there were girls that did not keep their mouth to themselves and let their soul express themselves in which way, which I'm very, very sad that unfortunately the children were not removed from the schools. Because no one was tracked out. They just desired to go out, they actioned not to go out. So we in Geir somehow very tame. We didn't shut anyone out.
I mean, Ger was, Shischa was
that's
unique.
Good. That is good.
So if we have people in our Moisid who, they're not exactly like us, then they should be, this is what Shischa stood for.
Again, today you go in Rosh Hashanah in the afternoon in Ger Bas Medrash, you'll find one Nigman thing, tell him, one Nigman on Nigamara. One Nigman might be still davening Musaf. Another Nigman might be having long Sudas Yamtas. And so in the fourth thing in or fifth thing in be walking up and down, doing his bonanus. You see all types in there till today, in Shkiblich today, I dive in the Shkibl, but I'm allowed to start Shabbos morning 25 minutes earlier. Our people that get up very early, they'll go see very late. There are all different types of chassidim, many, many styles, and Hogim and Ger are basically zero. Basically zero. Ger is very much individualism. But again, in Pshitzchah, they taught us, Lo yimachshavoyis v'machshavoyiseichem. A Rebbe is beyond us. What Rebbe says is nothing to argue about.
I would disagree. I think that, and I'll show you source and thing, that in the Masayim Tzofim and in the Seal Sefer Kodesh, they bring a story where the Rebbe Rabbinim had a disagreement with the Yidda Kodesh, right? And he said, if this is your opinion, I can't be a chassid. In other words, they were very much, they did not look at the Rebbe as like they did by the Chayza. Like the Rebbe was almost like an L.A. Kuss. They looked at him, you're here to be madrach me, and when I disagree with you, and I'll show you chapter and verse in the Shiach Sarfei Kaish and the Rambam Sayim Saifim. And in this, they were very different than the scene that preceded them.
I would like to say only Rambam Sayim Saifim, not Shiach Sarfei Kaish, because of the story, I'm sure you are aware, who was Yitzchak Kaddish, was a very anachah person, but it's not a reliable source. But the vort Lemachshavos and Machshavosichem is a reliable vort. The Rebbe is not the greatest chassid. The Rebbe's Lemachshavos and Machshavosichem, Rebbe Heinrich said it in the name of the Rebunim. It's quoted by all the Rebbe's down to the Menachem. They all said that. The Rebbe is beyond Seichel. And Muna starts where the Seichel finishes.
When the Kotzke went to the Chayza, he spoke to him very sharply. He says, if you're going to do these kunst, then I can't have you for a Rebbe. I mean,
It was about the penknife.
Yeah, so I'm saying, who would speak like that to their Rebbe today?
Which that is not saying that the Rebbe is not beyond me. That means I came into my avoid in Orech HaKodesh. That is Pritzker, because Pritzker had both ideas consecutively. But again, once the Rebbe instructs and says a clear law, that is non-questionable.
So basically, you agree that Ger is about individuality.
100%.
And if somebody wanted to stay in the Meistis and was respectful of the Rebbe as being a big Tzaddik HaDoyer, etc., and wanted to, at the same time, go to another Rebbe, him personally, it would not be an issue. It's an issue because you're saying that this Kat has many in it that are sort of the Lutzonim, and they speak badly about Tzaddikim.
I didn't say they all are.
I didn't say all. You said there are many who have become Adam Ra and Chavira, and that's why, except for them, you can go anywhere.
I did not say Adam Ra. I said Chavira.
Okay, Chavira.
Yeah.
Chavira, because they're disrespectful. Okay, this was very enlightening.
Thank you very much,
Rebbe Earl, okay? Kol tov, good chair.
Now that I heard the two people interviewed on the show 2.5 weeks ago, I would like to address various comments made. Point number one, I am not an ambassador of Ger, nor spokesman. I'm not worthy of that. I'm speaking from my view, and I want to comment. One, the change done in the Derech HaLimud in Ger is not a theory, it's history. It's there already 17 years, and it's, Baruch Hashem, been very successful. It's brought out hundreds of Yungalites who are fluent in big parts of Shas, many Yungalites that are fluent in entire Shas. One out of every 10 Yungalites around the age of 30 are fluent in Halacha and Kut Paskan. After all, the Rebbe made a revolution some 20 years ago. At every single Bocha, learned every single day in our Mishneh Berurah. Naturally, a bocha, by the time he gets married, is fluent in Mishneh Berurah. And many of them go on to learn Halacha B'Iyun. And by the age of 30, they're fluent in Aharo Ilohilos. And hundreds of Ingele have learned Choysh and Mishpat, and have been many have been tested by the foremost Dayanim of the generation, Rabbi Zalman Nechemi Goldberg, Rabbi Nachman Nozbaum, and others. I personally have learned in yeshivas from the time of Ian till today, and know it all firsthand. And clear that the smodda and the knowledge going on today wasn't around in my days, at least. There are tens of Magidei Shiurim in Ma'abita Torah who are already in the system over 40 years, and all say Baruch Hashem, despite that the Rebbe made a big doggish on Chol Bonaich Limudei Hashem. There are streams for every single individual, that everyone should find his connection to the Torah. Nonetheless, it's been successful for all standards, from the lowest to the highest, in all different ways. Point number two. Ger never believed in relying on the tzaddik and not having self-investment and self-revision. You always have to have your own horovani, as they say in Yiddish. However, taking on the authority of a tzaddik, a godly by Yisroel, was always one of the foundations of Yiddishkeit. That was a Messiah, especially from the Me'emes by Yisroel of Simcha Pnei Menachem, and it's brought down on all the Torah, in Arachem HaKadosh, in Pashas Tzorei, Shmer B'Shamato. They all learned as the Chinuch explains, not only in Sanhedrin, but in all generations, Yemin and Shmer, even the opposite we might feel and understand. It's ironic that a professor who's very far from the Haredi lifestyle gave his opinion about Haredim and says that he finds about Haredim, about instance Ger Chidim. It's clear that all his information or most of his information is fed from the internet, which is far from reliable, and not from Mechanchim or within the institutions that are living it. And he says to everyone, point number three, he says everyone is uniform. Sounds almost like those that say the Haredim are all the same. I know today in Eretz Yisrael there are over 100 shtiblich. Each one is different. Everyone is unique. Every mashkiach in 20 yeshivas of Gaon, more than 20 yeshivas, is different. One teaches Reb Tzadik, one Maral, one Chabad. Every magachi is different. Every family is different. Whoever can go into any Ger shtibl, meet Ger friends from all over the world, London, Antwerp, America, Israel, Switzerland, you'll see that there are many, many colors and many different faces and personalities through Ger. And all levels of Yiddishkeit, they're very different. Point number four. Every breakaway, legitimate or not legitimate, doesn't deserve to get the name Pshitzcha. Again, breakaways might be legitimate. Anyone who decides to leave a framework for whatever reason is not always history repeating himself. What is repeating itself is that any person who looks perhaps orthodox or firm is criticized for being narrow-minded fanatic. Yes, Ger does demand filth on the internet. They have very strict rules regarding technology and many other areas of Yiddishkeit, as Rabbi Lichtenstein said. That's how Yiddishkeit throughout the generation, the extremism, in inverted commas, of the Hasidim, which built and protected them from many outside influences and very powerful winds. Point number five. Anyone who wishes to leave is free to do so. Anyone can go wherever they want. However, what Rabbi Lichtenstein asked, why did many Mechanchim advise to disconnect? My opinion, which I understood from my Rebbe, Moshe Yosef, any person who doesn't believe in tzaddikim, and especially when they ridicule all the values in our chinuch system, can't be within. They don't belong there. I'm sure the Mechanchim gave advice based on a lot more information, but since Lashon Hara is author, I don't know all what they know. And now, a final note, I would like to thank him personally for an unbelievable publication of Mishnah Achrona, which helps me. I learned almost daily since the Rebbe told me 20 years ago to learn halacha every single day and hour as a bocha. I still learn halacha. And in Mishnah and Hilchos Shabbos and in Chelik Vav, it's very, very useful, especially as the hadrocha is not just to learn Mishnah Berurah, but to understand it halacha and the maisa, and their evolution is greatly enhanced with the great form he brought out. But ironically, yes, perhaps we are uniform on one angle in Gera, that every Boch is told in his young years to be programmed according to Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Berurah, and not deviate unless there's a clear minhag from the words of the Mishnah Berurah. Thank you again, Rabbi Lichtenstein, for your Mishnah Achrona and for the opportunity to speak on your show. Ksiva v'chasima tov.
I got in, Reb David. I listened to the interview about Ger. I have many brothers that went in Ger Yeshivas. Almost every single thing that was discussed is not true. They don't learn any Rishonim. Forget about, that's not called learning. You have to understand, they can't listen to a Shir. They never heard a Shir Ian in their life. They all have Charata. When they come to Koyla, they cannot learn. It's a fact. Most of my brothers that were in Ger Yeshivas went to work. The other ones, their mom is hurt. They feel like their life was ruined. The fact that they do not learn. The man said there's a Maggid Shir. There's no Maggid Shir. you come in, ninth grade is the only grade they teach a little bit of Gemara, Taich, and then you the rest of the day learning blatter, blatter, blatter. And growing up, mom's they don't know what to think. I'm saying, besides them, the Torah, their head never opens up. They feel like vegetables. Speak to Garabach, and they're so hurt. And it's very sad. It's sad that 20 years, people were just getting mamish, amarasim, and these people I see leave calm, and they mamish don't know what's going on again. They're close-minded. They're right mahalik, they're cute, but they never got a taste of it. There's no shiurim in Gerak, no dafiyayim shiurim. And Baruch Hashem, the Kehillah will be from one of the biggest chassidus. And Baruch Hashem, you go into your shalim, you see a yeshiva with hundreds of bachim learning Ian for the first time. It's very emotional, and Baruch Hashem, bachim are starting to learn. This is not like Kehillah, they're learning like Chachma Leblin and other things that mamish never heard of. Maybe you should interview a Gerar Bacher that went through the system. Maybe we should get someone that went through the system and doesn't never heard of the Mashah in his life. And with that they say they don't speak to, I can give you names of bachim, you can call them up. They never heard of these names even. And if you go into Gerar Besmedesh, the biggest Besmedesh in the world, there is not one set of Rajba in the place. Kol Tov. And I hope you don't open their eyes and don't get angry at by a few people.
So basically, started a long time ago. You have to go back to history to the beginning of the whole parasha. So I don't want to. So I'll take first. I'll talk on what the Gary guy says. Basically, it's not true. There's no such person as Baron LeBron was in Gary, and not like a cheer. So. You spell it the fourth name, you don't want to come up with his real name, whatever. So, basically, it's like this. He was saying that it's not a problem that a bucha should look into the shine name in yeshiva. So, let's say like this. In yeshiva ketanah, it's for sure you can't look into the shine name. The staff will put pressure on you not to look into the shine name. Yeshiva gedolah, which is probably a little different. What I understood is that there are certain yeshiva gedolah. They could do whatever you want to look at the Yeshayim also, but it's for sure frowned upon between the Bukhim, so it's more like a social pressure not to look at the Yeshayim. There are Bukhim that don't have problems with social pressure, not from the one, that's for sure. So I think what it said that in the lab, after the Chachim learn Yeshayim, they become Rabunim, so that aspect is for sure. He needs to say that you learn Tosha Chumudah. Called Tari and the Little Shalar, called Tor. So, yeah, they need to learn Tasha Chemicham with Yeltif, but for sure, learning the Gnium and understanding and the depth of the Yeshayim is very hard for someone that learned the Chief to hold the Yeshiva life, and it's sure not easy. Those that do it are mostly like, geniuses or whatever, things like that. Most of them don't do it. There are not the in every color in there is called Megamot, that you have to learn different stuff. And you cannot have any in Megamot. There's a little, but very small, like mostly 16 galahs or something, and very small. And most people are not capable even to learn the yin because they didn't learn it in Shiva yet. And what he says there's hundreds in the lab that are learning Kosher Mishpat itself is for sure not true. There's not a hundred in the lab. Of course, there are in the lab that are learning Kosher Mishpat, mainly in the lab that learned Ian, talking about like 35-year-olds and up, and also in the lab that didn't learn in the Gary Yeshiva. There are like that, but it's not much. Very frowned upon to learn not in the Gary Yeshiva. That's the social pressure that there is. And a lot of times, I even saw one in myself. There was a certain age group that even made a chayim with a few within the mom that was in the 13-year-old. And a book that went to learn in the Yeshiva that learned in the frowned upon. In America, it's much more common that they did it, and America is the claw more open in that aspect. Talking about Israel, so basically that's the theme what he said. Not learning Torah. So it's sure that the last few years, they were made up that they shouldn't learn they were trying to oppress you, like all the Bukhim shouldn't wear parts of it. There's a story of a Bukhim that I heard from a second hand, from a person that his nephew went into the Rebbe, and he told him that he had a good head. He wanted to know which Megamah he should go into. And the Rebbe said, if he has a good head, he should go learn without Tarsus. That way he should finish shop and he shouldn't learn any Tarsus. So to sure it's not the Gedank of not learning Tarsus is also made for the good head, because the goal is to finish shop. Now, what happens is, he says, this Ribeiro says, that most Bukhim finish Talmud Glatt Muriyashi in Yeshiva Ketana. That's 4 years in Yeshiva Ketana. That's for sure not true. Mainly the good head finish Talmud Glatt. That's like around the good head means the better Bukhim from the grave. And that's for sure not the norm to do. Of course, that's the official goal for every Bukhim. But it doesn't come through.
Yeah, I was listening to the show about Ger. I have brothers that learned in Ger Yeshivas. I have two Ures on what the Ger Chusid said. Number one, as he said, that if you want to learn Rishonim, you can learn. First of all, if you learn Rishonim in Ger Yeshivas, the side that you're upgefragt, they look at you like you're crazy, they write a few also, they make fun of you. If you open a Rishon, it's like a crazy thing to do. So like he made it sound like, you know, they speak through Marshals and those. Those helps from the Shon. That's the first aura. The second aura, he called them Maggid Shiurim. If you know, but there's no Shiurim in Chassidei Ger Bechlal. And even in Daf HaYomi, the Rebbe didn't really want Shiurim. There's Kamat no Shiurim. But it's not like there's a Maggid Shiur. There's no such thing. There is, I think, in the first grade, when you come in ninth grade, there is someone that teaches you the Gemara, and from then on you learn yourself. And the Shoyle Meshav and a lot of Mashgichim. Like every two Bochum have a Mashgiach. I'm saying every single thing of what the Bochum does. But there's no such thing as Maggid Shir. These Bochum never listen to a Shir. It's Favetik to Pasha. I can't. But you hear a lot of people leaving Oris that they know nothing about what's going on in Ger. They think that they have either learned the Iker Rishon, they don't go slow like in America. They mamish didn't get the vote of what's going on over there. I know from inside. Whatever. This is the situation. Very sad.
We're continuing our interview with Professor Benny Brown, who's written about the Chazon Ish, about Karlin, and he's one of the leaders in Jewish thought and Hasidus, certainly a great Jewish historian. Professor Brown, in Hasidus there have been many times splits. For example, Pshischa split from the Yid HaKadosh, right?
Right. From the Chayza.
The Yid HaKadosh split from the Chayza. In the current Ger, what is the history of Hasidus towards, you know, new factions or splits in their you know, lineage or in their, like what happens so often? I mean, there are so many examples.
Yes, in the history of Ger, there weren't many splits, relatively less than in other places. And there were...
Ishbit split from Kotsk, right?
Right. This is not Ger. Ger is...
Yeah, preceded. Preceded. The Kotsk was one before the Chiddush HaRim, in that lineage, yeah?
Right. After the Chiddush HaRim became Rebbe, there weren't many splits.
No, there weren't any.
There were. The Pilz was a branch that split out, not with big noise and things, and not without any quarrel or outrage, but it was a different faction of Ger. Also,
what was the reaction to Ger when he split?
Nobody cared, actually. So it wasn't really. There was no competition. There was no rivalry. It was just fine. The Pinchas Menachem of Pilz had a small Hasidic group. It wasn't anything that threatened the big gear of the interwar period or anything like it. And this was the only thing, but there were other things that the groups within Ger that didn't fully accept the leadership of the Rebbe, and they kind of existed in not as a separate group, but sort of minor opposition, let's call it, or mini rabistave. That happened. There were some people who weren't fully satisfied with the Beis Asur, and they were called the Ishbitzev in Ger, but they didn't form any official opposition. Under the Pnei Menachem, actually, there was the present Rebbe did head some kind of small rabistave of his own without splitting officially, but still didn't accept the full authority of the Rebbe of the Pnei Menachem.
So when the Siftzei Tzaddik, who was the Pilzer Rebbe, split, mm-hmm. he was a brother-in-law of the Sfasemis, you say it was mm-hmm. there was no acrimony from the Hasidus.
Right. The, after the Tzaddik has never declared himself a Rebbe, and Hasidim tried to push him to that, but he refused and still refuses. And in fact, in actual terms, it is a rabistave, but he didn't call it that way. He calls it a kehila, it's a community. And the reaction was very harsh. Not only the big and strong, in the beginning they called them, you know, the bitter ones, the leftists, smolanim, yes. And they belittled the fact that only 200 families belong to that community. But at the end of the way they acted in a very aggressive way, and which actually reflects some degree of pressure. And the peak of that response was the fact that they declared a cherem on anyone who would be in contact even with this kehila, and kicked out, of course, kicked out any son or daughter of the Charles community out of the Moistis, Yeshivas, Besyankiv, anything that belongs to Gera doesn't accept them. But also they were really pressing to disconnect with family members or not be engaged, actually fight with family members who belong to that group and disconnect any contact with them. And that was the peak of it, and still is. This is what they do all the time, even in these days. Some of these measures actually helped, and people refrained from moving there. But as it looks today, more people do move to a Prowl's community.
So I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't this go against the very grains of the teachings of Pshisra? In other words, he famously argued with his own Rebbe, the Yid. There are many stories. And mm-hmm. and so many of his Torahs are, everybody has to find their own way.
Right.
Right. He famously said, people go to some tzaddikim, they give their life over to the tzaddik. He said, mm-hmm. I believe that the avodah of the tzaddik is to show everybody their own path. But please
right.
don't cast your lot. Don't depend on me. You can look at me as to how to behave, but you have to make your own. It's both in the Sir Sarfei Kodesh it's brought, as well as the... So my question to you is Teferis HaYehudi brings these stories. Doesn't this go against the very essence of the teachings of Pshischa?
Already the Chitcherim was not as keen as about the individuality as the Pshischa Rebbe was, the Simcha Bunav of Pshischa was. He was much more kind of a Rebbe of a mass community or mass group, which naturally doesn't give you so much room for your individuality. So the resignation from Pshischa way started short after Rabinam passed away. It's not an innovation of this generation, but still, actually, you're right about the fact that Hasidism has always been something that is, even not Pshischa, even other Hasidic groups, yes, it was supposed to be something that a person connects to it on the basis of his feeling and his tradition shumah. And unlike the community of the local community and other communities, to which you belong by membership, by your locale, or by whatever official criterion makes you a member, here it was supposed to be something that is based on emotion, based on your deep feeling of connection to the Rebbe. And I don't know many precedents, there are some, but I don't know many precedents in the history of Chassidus on the whole, in which really actually they try to force people to remain in.
I mean, that's I think, Rabbeinu, that Professor Brett, this is the mm-hmm. point I'm asking. If if it's about connecting, if it's about searching for somebody who you believe is your Shayrish HaNeshama, if you don't connect to a particular Rebbe and you say, I want to go to somebody else where I connect, I mean, and they say, no, we'll throw all your kids out of school. Doesn't that go against the essence of what the Chassidus is? I mean, the Yid HaKadosh, who ultimately was the founder of Pshischa, and, you know, Ger comes from him, famously said, he said that everybody has to search for who could find the Shayrish for their neshama. Everybody has it. So how do you force somebody to say, you have to be here even though you don't connect to this person? Like, I just don't understand it.
It's indeed a question. And one of the answers is that Hasidism went through many changes since the Baal Shem Tov's time. Not only that, I mean, even in the 19th century, you find in Dino, for example, in the Ibn Yisoscher, saying that a man has to really toil and go from place to place and wander from court to court until he finds the right place of his neshama. It's indeed, in early Hasidism, it's a tenet. It's a basic, very basic element of the essences of Hasidism. In later Hasidism, it changed because Hasidism has been is more and more institutionalizing, and even these days, but especially during the 19th century. And the more it became institutionalized, the more the ties became institutional. So on the basis of membership and community and even kind of services, you know, the cynics in Hasidic communities today call it Kupat Cholim in Israel, you know, which is actually something like Medicare in the United States. That is something, you know, you pay your taxes and you get services, and that's the basis of your connection to the community. It was not supposed to be like that. It is not the innovation of Baal Shem Tov and his Talmidim, his disciples. And actually, you can say that Ger of these days radicalized processes that have already begun in the 19th century.
Right.
Even more interesting in this matter, if you ask about theological aspects of this divide, one of the, I think, striking works that have been written as part of this debate is a, you must read it, by the way, I think, it's a booklet by the name of Shoftim v'Shotrim Titen Lecha, by one of the, intellectual, thinking Chosid in Ger, by the name of Mordechai Roshetsky. And the striking point in this booklet is that it actually comes to prove not only the fact that a Rebbe is a kind of social and political authority beyond his spiritual authority, it actually comes to prove from precedents of Jewish history and from sources in Jewish history that Rebbe is like a kind of judicial and political authority in the old sense of the word, when a kind of sovereign, I would say, and the actual implication of this understanding is that a Rebbe has the right to enforce his decrees by force, by a physical force. And this is really something I don't know in the history of Hasidism before. Ger of today is, by many things, you know, Ger has a history, at least in recent generations, of, you know, not very rough Hasidic path, or Ger Hasidim are often called, you know, Chai Sakoidish. This is a nickname that was given to them in the 1980s. But often, you know, you see it as a kind of ethos or behavior or characteristic. But here you see a work written intellectually with some depth, trying to prove to you that a Rebbe and his men are entitled to use force, physical force in the pure sense of the word.
Wow. You know, it's interesting. They, in the Kel Simcha, there's a story. On the CSR Fikaidish is a story. He said that they came out with a gzeira in Poland that Chassidim can't go to the Rebbe. So he says that the Tamaril, who was the benefactor of Dreb Rabinim, she had supported him for many years. So she had connections with the government, and she had it in his battle. And when they came to Dreb Rabinim, he sighed and he said, really, it would be much better if the gzeira stayed. And in fact, they sent Kazakhs to surround each Rebbe's home so that nobody could see him, and that he would be able to do his Avodas HaKodesh b'yichidus and keep the doors locked, and that would be better for the world. So he believed that, and what the Kotzke, and there's another story that Siach Sarfei Kodesh brings, he says that similar thing, he says, but he brings this story, and then he says, the difference Avram had opened was, he traveled the world, right? He says, Yitzchak Avinu, this is what the Pshar Rabbunim said, he bolted the doors, he locked the doors. He said, and he was able to be Mashpia that way. And the Kotzke famously said, I bolted my doors. So here we're going the entire opposite way. Here we had, they felt that their power was so great through bolted doors where nobody could see them, they could be Mashpia on the world. And here we have where we're tying people and saying, you must come to the Rebbe by force. It's like, it's so diametrically opposed, it's astonishing. One Rebbe pushed people away and said, only if you really, really want to come, can you come. And the other one is saying, this I don't know, this fellow, this Avraham Marcha, that's a Gerer name, is saying that the Rebbe has a right to force you to come to him.
Not to force you to come as much as to force you to obey his decrees. That's the point there. I mean, if he says this, you should do this and not move anywhere else, but and not disobey, at least
is there any,
as you're a member of the community.
Is there any
that's
precedent?
The point.
Could you find a precedent for this in Hasidus?
No. Using the use of force, no, definitely not. I think I know Hasidic literature throughout. No, this is absolutely unprecedented. This is absolutely unprecedented, sorry.
It's a new Mahalach in Hasidus, you're saying?
Right, yes. And I don't say that it's Ger Hasidism of today is the first to use force. And, you know, splits in the past were always very heated and often violent as well. You know, fights within the family are often very emotional. So yeah, they did use force. And that's not new. And Hasidic groups often did terrible things as part of interior struggles. And Satmar, for example, they did what Satmar often does. The point here is the intellectual effort to justify it lechatchile. I mean, it's not something that is done, by the way, as part of, you know, ethos, as I said before, or characteristics of a certain Hasidic group. It's justified lechatchile as part of the Rebbe's authority, which is striking in my eyes.
Now, we had on a Ger Hasid who said that the current Rebbe does not allow learning Be'iyun, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we got messages. They said, well, the Gemara says a person should first learn everything, should first be a Sinai, and then afterwards he should be Ma'ayin. First you should... Do you know the learning that they do in Ger today? Like, do they learn Rishonim? Do they learn Achronim? Do you have any idea?
In the yeshivas, they don't learn, I mean, even in Kolelim, I mean, they don't learn even Tosfos.
What did you say?
And not even Tosfos.
You're kidding me. I don't believe that. That's really silly.
In Ger Yeshivas, it's forbidden to learn Tosfos. It's just Gemara and Rashi, that's all.
And in that's the Kolelim, they don't learn Tosfos?
In the Kolelim, I think it might be a little more, I don't want to say things I'm not sure about, but as far as I know, no, not even in the Koilelim. But maybe there it's a little more moderate. I'm not sure. But they don't study Gemara in Eon, no. That's not the...
They don't learn Tosfos.
No. In the Yeshivas, no. Just Gemara and Rashi.
Wow, that's astonishing. I find that hard to believe, honestly.
Okay, you're allowed to, I mean, but you can ask Chassidim themselves about that. That was about, when the Rebbe decided on that, there were rumors. I personally don't know what, you know, motivated him to do that, but rumors said that one of the reasons, at least, that he did that was to diminish the public presence of Shaul, who was, of course, known as a great scholar of in Iyun. He was then the Rosh Yeshiva of Tzfat Emes in Jerusalem, and actually remained without any practical duty. The Rebbe himself said that it's a matter of more kind of social care for the weak Hasidim, and also he said that the Iyun is often was proven to be something a way, kind of waste of time. They study only a few pages a year, those who study Iyun, and this way they concentrate more on quantity and they have the chance to finish the Shas in a certain time and things like that. In fact, I think I can't tell, but not all. This is what Ger Chassidim will tell you. These were the main justifications of that move. I'm not sure about what the Rebbe had in mind. I mean, it's not. I can't really tell what's in man's mind, but I'm sure that at least some of the considerations were kind of political. What percentage of the decision was made of that? I'm not sure. I can't tell.
So then they don't learn, obviously, Sfasemis or anything like that if they don't learn Tysis, right?
Yes, and Hitcharim and other things as well. Yes, you can try, you can study it at home, no problem. Nobody will tell you, but not in the yeshivas, definitely not. Actually, it's Ger of today is really much, it doesn't want to foster people who think too much. Let's say that way. I mean, it's... the tendency is you can be, you do what you want in at your home. Nobody looks at your library and searches what you read. But basically, the idea is, first of all, obedience. First of all, be loyal chassid. Don't think too much. Don't ask too much. Don't the Rebbe's is also are also quite succinct, simple. You won't find there the deep theology of Sfasemis. People might say that it's not his style. It's okay, but it's not the deep going style of Sfasemis or things like that. It's basically, I mean, a kind of idea. He says that, and that's about all. Ger of today doesn't foster too much thinking. Let's state it that way.
But how is it possible that the Chassidus that was known for Talmidei Chachamim should not allow Tosfos? I mean, even like Hungarian, you know, the most Amcha Chassidus, there's not a single one of them that doesn't allow Tysfus. Like, how could that be?
So people really were asking that question, but that is the fact. I mean, as I said, the Rabbi justified it. Part of the answer to that question is something I told you, we spoke about in our previous conversation, that in Ger, the tradition is not to keep tradition. I mean, a Rebbe has the right to change, make different moves than his ancestors, to change a path, and that's okay. I mean, when the Beis Yisrael, for example, started the matter of Kedusha, which nobody had it before, I mean, that wasn't caught, but when he had this as a leading idea for Ger in our times, because he thought it's the best way to fight the temptations from the outside. That's the innovation of this. So basically, nobody said, oh, hey, how do you come and innovate something new before that didn't wasn't the idea of your forefathers? So it's okay. And when later on the Lev Simcha put much more emphasis on social issues, okay, you put more emphasis on social issues. So in Ger, you can say also that even before that, Imre Emes put the greatest emphasis, I think, I know at least in the history of Hasidism, at least before him, until him, on politics, on political activism as part of, the Hasidic ethos. That was his right. I mean, in Ger, you can renew paths of your own, if you're Rebbe, of course, and that's the issue. It's a part of the idea of self-renewal, which is a basic idea in Ger. That's why also, the Nigunim in Ger are also not something very traditional. They always have this idea of putting in new Nigunim, because you have to renew yourself, and the Rebbe has the right to renew Hasidic paths. So, okay, so the ancestors said that was proper for their times, and for our times, it's different. By the way, just to tell you a nice story about that, Sfasemis was against buying land in Eretz Yisrael, and also against allowing Haredi newspapers. No newspapers at all. It was against newspapers, against press, so he said no Haredi papers. that's not legitimate. And his son, that's his first MS, the MIMS, was for buying land in Eretz Yisrael, and also for, not only it was for Haredi Press, Orthodox Press, it was also founded, even more than one newspaper, for that purpose. And the story goes that once the MIMS opened the Tosvot, I think, the Haredi newspapers of that time, and one of the old Chassidim went in and saw him reading a newspaper. So he said, you know, a kind of justification for the rabbi, I believe that in our time, your father, again, the Tate would also allow that. So the Emes answered him, no, my father would not allow that in our time, and I would allow that in his time. Because that's me, and that's him, and I have the right to renew my path. That's my mandate, kind of.
How do they plan on having like Paiskim, and if they don't learn Gemara?
Okay.
Shaina, so how do they do that?
The rabbi says, if you're learning to be a rabbi, of course it's different. And
aren't the Kailim learning to be Rabbanim?
Yeah, so they are. If you're going to be to learn about for a bonus, that's a different thing. Then of course you have to study Paiskim, you have to study Gemara, Tosfos, Shonim, anything is needed for becoming a rabbi. I'm speaking about the lay people, so to speak, or the common people, the rest of the people, those who are not. If you make it to a profession, it's different. It's absolutely different that they will probably allow. And where does the limit exactly pass? I'm not sure about really when. Is the point in time, or when is the point in your career when you're allowed to start studying other things as well? But of course, if you're studying to become a rabbi, it's absolutely different. Yeah.
Wow. Any other points you would like to mention?
Just maybe to add personal comment. I think it's a sad story indeed. I mean, it's a very painful story for many people, and I think that the idea that something like that might succeed, I think it's really fantastic. It's really even weird, I would say, to think that you never in the history of Hasidism, at least that I know, did anyone stop a Hasid group to emerge or to develop by force or by fighting. You can imagine
when you
by
see,
force.
When you
but,
say it's very painful, how do you see that it's painful? Like, what does that mean?
What I said before, family splits, people, friends, family members are no longer in contact.
Well, but if he only has 200 families, it can't be too many families that have split.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and 200 families are really in very unpleasant condition. And if you remember, it's 200 families from both sides. I mean, the pain is for both sides. Those who remain in are also in pain or agonized by the fact that they can't be in contact with the family members that seceded. So it's and large families, and don't forget that family is not just family. I mean, they're also friends. Friends have to stop remaining in contact. Even old friends sometimes. It's a sad story. And 200 people, 200 family members, so even more is not so little. It's not so little either. But I hope as time passes, people will rethink it. People will rethink it and find other ways to convince people to remain.
Do you see Reb Shaul Alter being successful, or will all these restrictions keep him from being successful?
It depends on what you call successful. If you ask him, what he has now is a success. He doesn't need more. If you gave those examples, yes, about Rebbe like Rabinim and others in the history of Hasidim, who said, I don't need, the Kotzka said, I don't need too many Hasidim. I need only 300 Hasidim. That would be, each of them will be like, that's also in Sikh Safek Kodesh, by the way. I need, as far as I remember, 300 Hasidim that will be like the Baal Shem Tov, each of them, and that's enough for me. And they'll go on the roofs, as he said, and will shout, Hashem
Olokim.
Hashem Olokim,
yes. Yeah, I saw this, I remember.
Yes.
This
so, the problem is not the Kotzker, but I mean, I believe that he doesn't seek to have empires. He does, actually, for 23 years, was absolutely silent about all this issue. All those fights, he kept silent. He didn't He didn't want to fight against it because he knew exactly what does it mean to fight against the big cat. And he would continue that way. From all kinds of events that happened, especially in the last summer, in the summer of 2019, he was kind of pushed into that. At the end today, for him, the success is that if he establishes a community where people can be more, of course, his main issue is studying in Iyun and more kind of thinking people, more kind of individual people, and they can live as they feel well with themselves, feel good with themselves. That's enough for him. He doesn't need masses. If you're asking about further development, if he'll grow, whether or not he'll grow, his community will grow, I believe it will grow. In the end of the day, at the end of the day, it will grow because there are too many people in Ger, within Ger itself. He also attracts people from other places, but not many. But in Ger itself, there are many people who had to, you know, kind of suppress their dissatisfaction for many years and still don't have the courage to move. Some of them, even today, leak out and move. But after the influencing of the Rebbe, the Rebbe's passing, I believe in that time when the Rebbe's sons will start fighting over the inheritance, that would be the period in which it would be much more difficult to hold people in, and many will move to him then. That's my, just assumption, my forecast for the future, if you're asking me. But nobody can tell for sure.
Professor Brown, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Good luck.
Take care. Bye-bye.